Welcome to America Tonight. Kate Delaney hanging out with all of you across this great nation. I'll tell you what, things are really heating up. We're in the dog days of summer, so I thought it'd be fun this hour to take a look at a couple of big things. This is really the year of the whistleblower. Is there any doubt about that? And besides whistleblowing and all of the stories about whistleblowing that we've talked about, and of course, Edward Snowden, the most famous, stuck in Russia. Am I going to end up in Latin America? The other thing that we really talked about in this nation so much, really for a year and a half, is the Stand Your Ground law in Florida and what was going to happen with George Zimmerman. Of course, he is acquitted of the murder of Trayvon Martin, and then the court of public opinion explodes in a different direction, and we're still having those conversations, and it involves the law, Stand Your Ground, which is in many states in this country, and race became part of the conversation, too, as well. And wireless traps. Could there be anything bigger when you think of connected almost to Snowden? You think of what happens as far as culling information and what I call the data diving, or it is like dumpster diving. That's why I keep thinking of it that way. In my head, I just picture it's like this giant imaginary arm that dips down and grabs our information, basically. So this hour is cool because we're going to hit every single one of those topics here in conversations with James Holzrichter, Lisa Graves for Stand Your Ground. And her opinion might be one that you don't agree with because she thinks Stand Your Ground. And she's a person who grew up with guns, shoots guns, all that kind of stuff, but does not agree with what happened in Florida. And then Neil Golding talking about those wireless traps, which, again, this is all a big part of our conversation that we've been having lately. In the meantime, a couple of other things. You know, the deal with trains and collisions, very strange, isn't it? It's one of those things I described before as somebody who grew up near trains, and it seems like wherever I live, there's like train noise in the background. I don't even think about it. I said this before on the show. I don't even think of a train, for some reason, as being dangerous. You get on the train, it's comfortable, boom, you're going. It's just this lull, the commute that you do. Well, now we've seen a terrible train accident in Spain and the Swiss train accident that just happened earlier this week. The two commuter trains, exactly what I'm talking about, colliding head-on Monday. You had one locomotive driver missing after the crash, and search crews prying open, of course, the crushed cab. This is becoming eerily familiar wherever it's happening, whether it's in Europe or it's closer to home. So it just makes you kind of wonder, and I know that there are people that are listening to us, in fact, that have jobs like that, as to what's going on. One has to do with speed. The second one, they're not sure. Was it an accident? Somebody not paying attention? You know, what was it as they still kind of try to figure this whole thing out? And how awful is that? So it's what a scary thing. And the impact of those trains, how that must have happened when the two of those commuter trains smashed into each other and then trying to figure out what this is. How could they possibly have missed this? And like I said, scary, scary stuff. Kind of continuing along those lines, this was a story that we talked about a lot on America Tonight as far as flying and what happened with that Asiana airliner in San Francisco. Now they're saying the National Transportation Safety Board is saying they came up with that this week, too, that the two Asiana pilots called for the landing to be aborted. Wow. How about that? That was like a piece of information we had no idea about. So after reviewing the cockpit voice recorders, you know, they always talk about that. How they got to go through that. They got to go through it. Then they figured it out. They had a better sense, obviously, of what was going to happen. It showed that the two pilots were trying hard to get the flight aborted before the plane hit a seawall and crashed horribly on the runway at the San Francisco International Airport. So the first internal call by one of the three pilots in the cockpit was to, like I said, to abort the landing. This is the problem, came 3 seconds before the crash, and the second was made by another pilot 1.5 seconds before impact. So that whole abort call, which we knew that there was supposedly a call, at least a call for that, but as it was reported, it was too close to when they were actually going to land. So it looks like they're wrapping up this investigation. They're cleaning up the debris because that debris has been like a rubbernecker. I hate to say it, a rubbernecker's paradise. I hear the traffic is so backed up as people who are getting close, in San Francisco, commuters are looking over to see, because you can see the plane and you can see it all, you know, all the yellow tape all around it and whatnot. So they're moving that investigation, as they always do, back to the headquarters in D.C., where they're going to try to come up with a more definitive answer about what led to the crash that killed the two 16-year-old Chinese girls. It was believed that one of them was run over and, of course, injured. This was the thing, and some of these injuries are terrible. Injured more than 180 people of the 305 that were on that plane. It usually takes, you know, we've had Denny Kelly on the show many times and some other pilots as well, but he's a crash investigator, and as he's told us many times, it takes about a year before you establish a cause for any accident. Usually it takes that long. They do the preliminary findings, and then they still say they have to investigate. Did it come in too low? Did it come in too slow? Or, you know, ultimately, what specifically are they going to write in the report as this is it, period? This is what the cause of this accident was. And then here's the other part of this, and this is the first thing that I wonder. Do people pay attention to this, what they're saying for the safety messages? Because there was no indication, they say, that electronics, because we keep having this thing about mobile phones, that it played any kind of a role in the 777 plane crash, because this constantly comes up as to whether or not this is something that's going on with passengers on a plane. You know, they always tell us, put off your phones and whatnot, because there were 911 calls from frantic passengers and onlookers and all that kind of stuff saying that the emergency people were super slow to get there and people were frankly needing help. So the 911 calls, though, had nothing to do with the people on the plane is what they're saying now at this point. And man, what a crazy thing that would have been to, and we've seen some of the cell phone footage. What a crazy thing that would have been to actually see this happen. You know, you were somewhere kind of near that runway. How surreal would that be to watch that plane go down? And what about the people that were on the plane that were perfectly fine? That's something, you know, they went down the chute, they got off the plane, and then they got that crazy kind of adrenaline rush that you must get when you're involved in a plane crash, because it's just something you don't think about. It kind of goes along with what I was saying about a train crash. It seems to be, it really statistically, if you look at it, it's so rare when you think of the hundreds of thousands of trains around the world that are running. And just like planes, it's such a rare thing. But when it happens, it's always so big for all of us because we can't really wrap our minds around the idea, I think, of it happening. It's just so, so frightening to think of being in that situation where, did I pay attention? What am I doing here? Do I need to grab the person next to me? How do I get out of here as safely as possible? Anyway, buckle up. Lots to come on this hour. Enjoy, kick back. Meet you on the flip side here on America Tonight. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis, but it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America, and he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier, and I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
quantitative easing, unemployment at depression levels, Europe's financial system falling apart, China getting out of U.S. treasuries. At the end of 2008, the time of TARP, the national debt was at $11 trillion, gold trading around $850 per ounce. Close to 2012, the national debt exceeded $16.4 trillion, gold doubled to $1,600 per ounce. The $20 trillion threshold for the national debt is inevitable. Politicians in Washington have a ferocious appetite for spending and stimulus. What's worse, a printing press to finance. 100 years ago, we had a gold standard to limit this madness, but now you have to adopt your own gold standard. Don't be fooled with paper promises. Get Midas Resources 10 Reasons to Buy Gold free by calling 800-686-2237. Understanding the gold and silver market may be the only insurance you could have to avoiding the next economic crisis. Call 1-800-686-2237 and order your free copy. Again, that's 800-686-2237.
If you owe the IRS back taxes, listen carefully. Sweeping changes to IRS policies will help more people than ever eliminate their tax debts once and for all. And now, thanks to Dan Pilla, you can get the tax help you need to end your tax nightmare.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I've helped thousands of people reduce or eliminate tax debts they couldn't pay. And after more than 30 years of experience dealing with the IRS, I can tell you there's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. With the IRS's new policies, it's easier than ever to put your tax debt behind you once and for all. Call now at 800-346-6829 to learn how I can help you. You know your IRS debt will not go away by itself, but you don't have to live in fear anymore. Call 800-346-6829. Learn how I can help you eliminate wage and bank levies, release tax liens, and negotiate a settlement with the IRS that will put your tax nightmare behind you forever. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. Or go to my website, taxhelponline.com. That's taxhelponline.com.
Tonight, coast to coast, and all those nooks and crannies in between. In our virtual green room, James Holzrichter is with us. And wait till you hear this conversation, because we've been talking about this for a long time. It's called retaliation. For people that see what's happening with whistleblowers and, oof, do I blow the whistle? Do I not blow the whistle? James has a book out called A Just Cause. He is a former whistleblower, and he's got a lot of experience in this field, to say the least. 25 years backing up the experience in legal research, and, of course, he holds a law degree. James, thanks for coming on America Tonight.
Thank you for having me on this evening, Kate.
So some people are listening to us, and they're maybe debating this. Debating is, you know, is there unethical things going on around me? And they've probably tossed and turned, and they feel that they're unethical. But they don't, they're afraid to blow the whistle, because let's face it, number one thing is people are afraid to lose their jobs. You're somebody who did it. How tough is it to take that leap?
Well, a lot of times, Kate, what happens is that it's not a choice that's actually made by the whistleblower. They're usually precipitated into doing it. They become aware of, as you mentioned, something going on that doesn't add up, or it causes an internal conflict. And so what they do is they find themselves faced with the decision, as you said, do I come forward or do I not? In my case, it wasn't actually a conscious decision. I was trying to do some internal correcting when the next thing I knew, I had a federal agent calling me on the phone.
Yeah, what was it? Tell us your story, and, you know, from the time when you got that call and what that odyssey was like.
Well, you know, in some ways, Kate, my story is just similar to many other people who really just get up every day and go to work, and then they start to find these issues, and it's really because of what they're doing, they become aware of these situations. I shared everything that I found with my supervisor, and I even brought it internally to Northrop Security when I hit a point of where they decided that they weren't going to correct the problem. They were going to cover up the things that I was bringing to their attention. And this was a decision that was made by upper-level management to involve me into helping them hide the beans, as so to say. And that's when the next thing I knew, I was confronted by a DCIS agent. And the next thing I knew, I was working undercover as a government informant.
Ooh, and you probably never expected to be in that position, did you?
Oh, absolutely not. And I cooperated in a federal investigation with my employer for over a year of where I was taping documents to my body, bringing them out to the federal agents and turning them over to them, that information to substantiate the allegations of the double and triple billing. And when the next thing happened is it was discovered that I was cooperating with the federal government in this investigation, and then they made it impossible for me to do my job, and the harassment that went on at work, I finally had to leave. And that precipitated a 17-year-long battle back and forth through the courts between us and Northrop Grumman.
Wow. I mean, ultimately, did you get some financial relief as a result of all this for 17 years?
Well, 17 years of underemployment and unemployment, yes, absolutely. My wife and I and our children, we wound up in a homeless shelter.
Oh.
There was substantiated attempts on my life as well as on two of my children, and they actually offered to put us in witness protection. And by then I was almost 50 years old, and I said, well, I can't go to become unemployed and homeless again, so we just turned it out. And yes, there is, under the False Claims Act, Kate, the government can award you a certain portion of the monies they recover from these types of cases based upon your contribution to the case and the information that you bring forward. And it can be anywhere from 10 to 30% depending upon that. But how do you give back your children their spent childhood? Mm-hmm. I mean, and the missed opportunities as they grow up in basically abject poverty because of the decisions that are made by one or the other of the spouse. Or their parents.
Yeah. Wow, that just had to be devastating. So, and as we listen to this and people hear the story of Ed Snowden and various other people who have blown the whistle, how do you decide if it's decided for you that's also different too, and it throws you in, hurls you into this world of hurt that you didn't necessarily choose. But what if you're in that situation where you either make the choice or you don't? I mean, would you advocate people not choosing to blow the whistle or blowing the whistle, or just be cautious and know what you're getting into?
Well, absolutely. Be cautious and know what you're getting into. There's an affiliation of attorneys that have come together to help whistleblowers navigate the morass that they might find themselves in. And it's one of the things that I do through that organization as well, is to mentor the whistleblower as they go through this process and to what to expect and when to expect it. And that's through an organization that is known as Taxpayers Against Fraud. And they're out of Washington, D.C., and they're actually a group of attorneys that, because some of these contractors as well as pharmaceutical companies, they have rather deep pockets, and they can afford to pay large corporations or banks full of attorneys to represent them to drag these cases on, like mine went on for the 17 years.
Yeah, do you think they're counting on that, geez, who's going to blow the whistle when they know ultimately what could happen to them, especially they have a family, and they don't have the kind of money we have and the army of attorneys? Do you think they count on that, these companies?
Oh, absolutely. They plan on it. It's the cost of doing business, because predominantly these cases settle without going to court. So, and they predominantly settle, too, for 10 cents on the dollar. So it's just the cost of doing business. So if you take, if that's the case, if you take $1 million and you only have to give back $100,000 of it, and you get to keep $900,000 and you drag this on for so many years, vilifying the whistleblowers and those people who come forward, if you're going to do it every day, all day long. And that's one of the things that are going on right now with these cases. And the Department of Justice is just overwhelmed. But one thing I will say is that for every dollar that is spent in pursuing these forms of cases, $14 is recovered.
Mm.
So it's a rather cost-beneficial thing to do. And since 1986, when the law had the teeth put back in,
right,
it's recovered over $28 billion of stolen taxpayers' money.
Wow. Wow. So you think that the road to blowing the whistle should be made easier?
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. And there should be programs and help that's put out there to help a whistleblower. Because one of the things that happens is because of the isolation that goes on and because of the arguments that are put forth by the defense bar in these situations is that when a whistleblower does come forward, Kate, they're left on their own. The government can't help them because then the argument is made, well, they set their company up for financial gain. When that's really the farthest thing from the truth.
Right.
These are people who really have ethics, who really, as I say, in a just cause, they find themselves between a rock and a hard place, and they come up with that same thing of when is it ever wrong to do the right thing?
Yeah, well said. Is there a group, have you ever met and had conversations with other people who have found themselves in the same predicament that you were in?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, that's what I did. I started this mentoring initiative through Taxpayers Against Fraud, and I mentor whistleblowers around the country who contact me through, of course, necessarily that filter because I'm only one person. And so I get calls from whistleblowers who are blowing the whistle from pharmaceutical companies to issues that involved with the Iraq war and things such as that. And one of the things, too, is when they file one of these cases, they're filed under seal, Kate. So they can't divulge who the other party is or what the necessary issues that are involved in the cases they bring. So I appreciate that because I don't want to get yanked into a deposition to try to make testimony for somebody who's talked to me about that. But I talk to them about the things that they can experience and that it's okay to rebuild their lives or maybe redefine themselves. And what they did was really a noble thing. And it does come at an expense, but to never, ever, ever forget their loved ones because most of the time their loved ones did not ask to pony up to journey on this journey with them. But they need to also include them in every decision going forward.
Yeah. The book, you mentioned it, A Just Cause. How can somebody get a hold of a copy of your book?
Well, they can go to my website, which is jameshholzerconsultancy.com, and they can obtain the book through there, or they can go to amazon.com as well and to purchase either the book or the download for it.
All right, excellent stuff. James Holzrichter, thanks so much for coming on America Tonight. What a story. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me on this evening, Kate.
Amino acids are the building blocks of proteins. Amino acids have to be delivered to your body in the shape that nature gave them if they are to be used to create new proteins in your body. Just like a bricklayer cannot use bent or twisted bricks to build a brick wall, so too your body cannot use bent or twisted amino acids to build new proteins. Giving your body an undamaged amino acid food can make a huge difference in your health. One World Way is an undamaged amino acid food unlike any other. You see, heating bends and twists amino acids, and all whey protein powders we've investigated, and most proteins you consume are heated. With our True Cool process, you now have a choice with One World Way.
My name is Daniel. I'm 34 years old. When I started using One World Way, I weighed 228 pounds. Now, after 2.5 months, I weigh 182 pounds. This is my ideal weight. I've noticed an increase in stamina, rate of recovery from workouts, and an increase in my potency.
Call 888-988-3325 or visit oneworldway.com.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
For over 5 years, you've been hearing about the Berkey guy, so you may know a few things about him. For example, you are well aware of the superior quality and effectiveness of Berkey water filters and accessories. But did you know the Berkeys have had independent lab tests done to prove just how effective they are? It's true, and he can email you the test results. Just visit GoBerkey.com. You may also know that the Berkey guy has helped tens of thousands of people get better prepared. Now here's something you may not know. GoBerkey.com has amazing specials and deals all the time on a wide variety of survival and preparedness products, most ready to ship same day. Visit the Berkey Guy at GoBerkey.com and be sure to click the red Products on Sale Now button. You can always call toll-free 877-886-3653. Again, that's 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com, home of the Berkey Guy.
Join us in Joshua Tree, California, August 9th through 11th for the Contact in the Desert UFO Conference, a weekend of in-depth exploration into ancient aliens, human origins, crop circles, UFO sightings, and new evidence of ongoing contact. The conference will feature films, panels, lectures, workshops, and fieldwork with leading experts including Stephen Greer, Giorgio Tsoukalos, Graham Hancock, Jim Mars, Michael Tellinger, Laura Eisenhower, Jason Martell, David Wilcock, Doc Wallace, David Zareda, and many, many more of the biggest names in ufology. The conference will coincide with the Perseid Meteor Shower, and the Joshua Tree Retreat Center offers the perfect place for sightings through the clear desert sky. Enter to win a free ticket at contactinthedesert.com. We look forward to seeing you in Joshua Tree in August for a serious look at mounting evidence that we are not alone. For more information, go to contactinthedesert.com or call 760-365-8371.
Springtime is sale time at Herbal Healer Academy. Current customers know this is the time to save big and stock up at HerbalHealer.com. New customers, welcome to the web's best place to save on vitamins, minerals, and more. Right now, Herbal Healer's spring specials include our 500 parts per million colloidal silver, all sizes on sale. CoQ10 with Hawthorn, Colon Enhancer, Sea Cucumber, Super Fam and Super Male Plex, plus Glucosamine Chondroitin, our best selling liquid CalMag vitamin D, and our colloidal minerals, all on sale for spring at HerbalHealer.com. And Herbal Healer also offers certificate correspondence courses in natural medicine. Enjoy same-day shipping and free online newsletter. Log on to our nation's leader in supplying quality natural medicine and education since 1988. Herbal Healer Academy at HerbalHealer.com.
What happened in the case of George Zimmerman and the Stand Your Ground law in Florida, and breaking it down. We've done that with a couple of different people. Well, thrilled to welcome to the show Lisa Graves of the Center for Media and Democracy, because we're going to talk about this law and its origins, where it started and how it's been adopted and all that kind of stuff. Lisa, thanks for popping on America Tonight.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, first of all, knowing Stand Your Ground the way you do, were you weren't surprised by the verdict, or you were?
I wasn't surprised by the verdict, but personally I was disappointed in the verdict. We didn't see the jury instructions until, you know, shortly after the verdict came. Some efforts were made to get them online, and they were finally posted in full, and that's when we knew for certain that the jury had been instructed on Stand Your Ground. So even though back in May the defense attorneys made a big announcement that they were not going to seek immunity from criminal prosecution under that law, the fact is that the judge issued the jury instructions that we were concerned would be issued in that case, which were the ones that were changed after that law passed in Florida in 2005. And they specifically instructed the jury that George Zimmerman had a right to stand his ground and had no duty to retreat.
Yeah. It's interesting because when that happened back in May, the first thing I remember saying on the air is, I know that this is going to come back around. I don't think this is going to stand the way it is right now. So explain Stand Your Ground and that law and how it became a law, the origins of it.
Sure. So, you know, in every state in the country, there are longstanding rules regarding self-defense, and in particular, the right to defend yourself in your home if there's an intruder in your home. And a traditional part of defending yourself in your home is that you don't have a duty to retreat typically in your home because you have no place to retreat to. you're in your home. And if there's an intruder in your home, the self-defense rules apply somewhat differently than if you're out on the street in a public space. And so what happened in 2005 was that the NRA, I think, was looking for the next area it wanted to push its agenda, in an area that it wanted to really try to squeeze politicians in. And it chose in Florida to push this law. It named this law back then the Castle Doctrine, trying to imply to people, in essence, that you didn't have a right to defend your castle when the law already, you know, provided for the defense of your castle, in essence. What that law did was something radical in three main ways. First, it changed the law to say that someone who makes a justifiable homicide claim, if the person says that they were in fear of their life, this is a short version of that, they would get criminal immunity, meaning immunity from being arrested or prosecuted. And that's why in the original part of this Stand Your Ground controversy last year, that's why George Zimmerman was not initially arrested or charged, was because this law was asserted as applying to him. The second part that the law changed was it actually changed the law for murder in the state. It changes the law for justifiable homicide to say that a person who is just walking along the street doesn't have any duty to retreat and could stand his ground in an altercation and meet force with force, including deadly force. And under Florida law and almost in the law in almost every other state before then, there was a duty to retreat, a duty to try to get away from a situation rather than to be the aggressor or stand your ground. And so it fundamentally changed the way justifiable homicide cases work in Florida. The third thing it did was it granted civil immunity for people who have this claim of justifiable homicide, so that a court could rule in a civil case that a civil suit, which is under a much lower burden of proof for the jury, you know, what's more likely happened that night versus proof beyond a reasonable doubt, that in those cases, the defendant could assert civil immunity and the plaintiff's case would not only be dismissed, but the plaintiff would be required to pay the killer's attorney's fees and lost wages. So these were extraordinary changes in law. They were pushed into law in 2005. By the NRA, and then they were taken by the NRA to the American Legislative Exchange Council, which ratified that as a great idea for the nation.
So, and then that ultimately, this spread to what, 24 states?
More than 24 states. So what happened is kind of interesting because a lot of people haven't heard of ALEC, but the American Legislative Exchange Council describes itself as the largest body of state legislators in the country. In fact, it's largely funded by corporations, and what it does is allow corporations to vote as equals with politicians on bills to change the law, so on model bills. So in that case, the NRA took that bill to a closed-door secret meeting in Florida that was co-chaired by Walmart, one of the largest sellers of guns in the country and one of the biggest sellers of ammunition in the world. And Walmart was the corporate co-chair at the time. The NRA was a member of that task force of ALEC. And corporate lobbyists, along with politicians, voted unanimously to try to push that law into – push that bill into law in many states. And that's what happened for the next 6 years. The NRA and ALEC pushed that bill into law in state after state.
Wow. The and looking at it and what you just described, too, previously talking about civil suits, what happens here? Because, you know, that's being discussed. So what you just mentioned, it's been discussed, the civil suit, but not this aspect of it, that if the defendant wants to assert it under a law in a civil suit, so if the family doesn't win, for example, I guess in Florida, we're talking about Trayvon Martin's family, then under that law, am I right, they would have to pay, based on what you say, they'd have to pay Zimmerman's attorney fees and his lost wages?
Well, it is. It's quite shocking because that law says that if the judge in a civil case grants immunity to the defendant, that under that law, the plaintiff has to pay the defendant's attorney's fees, lost wages, and court costs, which really means having the victim's family pay the killer's attorney's fees and lost wages. I think it's a morally repugnant law. And what happened in May when the defense attorneys decided not to ask for a ruling in the criminal case before the trial, they expressly claimed that they were reserving their right to assert immunity in a civil case if there were a civil case later on.
Yeah. And you certainly know that with what's happened here, could there be a more polarizing case, sadly, than what just happened and how it all unfolded and then the conversations about stand your ground and, as you said, more states adopting that? Do you think from your perspective in watching this, and I don't know if we really even have numbers on this because you'd have to look at all the individual cases where they invoked stand your ground and whatnot, but do you think that the problem is that that promotes somebody going after somebody instead of backing off in a situation where it might be better, they might be better served to just go away?
In fact, it has, it's been documented that it has in some instances, not every instance, but in some instances, there have been cases when stand your ground has been invoked when someone went back to their car to get a gun or get a knife. And there are instances in which someone clearly could have retreated, could have left the situation, an argument, rather than shoot. But once the argument started happening, the person shot. And often, in some of the cases that have been documented, the person who shot is unarmed. And so you have, in my view, and I'm someone who grew up in Colorado and I learned to shoot, as a teenager, it's the person who has the gun in that situation in general has a superior ability to retreat. They've got the gun.
Yeah.
And so the idea that the person who has a weapon, in essence, doesn't have any right to retreat, has a right to stand his ground, I think it's inherently volatile. I think it dramatically changes the rules. And for Florida, and some of the states that have adopted the exact same provision, it means that at any public arena, any bar, any public place on the street, the person can stand his ground. He doesn't have to retreat. And so in the case of George Zimmerman, the dispatcher asked him if he was following Trayvon Martin, if he was following this young man, and George Zimmerman said that he was, and the dispatcher said, you don't need to do that. The police are on their way. And George Zimmerman nevertheless followed Trayvon Martin, got out of his car, tried to find him, and apparently did find him, and this And Trayvon Martin ended up dead, and there's obviously a dispute about what happened at that moment. But there's no doubt that this killing, this murder, this death would not have occurred if George Zimmerman had stayed in his car, if he hadn't pursued Trayvon Martin, if he hadn't had a gun, a concealed weapon that night.
Yeah. Do you think we'll see challenges to stand your ground? More people that say, yeah, this is just is not working, even though I'm not anti-gun, stand your ground in these cases that we're just talking about is not a good thing.
I think that there's going to be a renewed effort to get these laws repealed. The self-defense laws that are already on the books are more than adequate. They've many of them have been around for decades. It's not as though there isn't a right of self-defense. But in an ordinary case, you have to actually prove that your self-defense claim was valid, justifiable homicide in that way. What this law allows and what George Zimmerman could have done is seek immunity so that the jury never gets that case. So that the judge rules, or in the case of the way the NRA designed the law, so that police don't even prosecute a person. A self-defense case is hard to win in a criminal court because it often is a he said, she said situation. And in a murder case, one person is dead and can't speak for himself or herself. And so a self-defense claim, can often result in reasonable doubt and a jury not convicting. But the notion that we should be denied justice, that people should not be able to pursue these cases and have it go to a jury and have the jury be instructed that, a person can't just stand his ground and have no duty to retreat, I think that that's a real distortion of the law. And I think that saying that families might have to pay the killer's attorney's fees and wages, I think that that's really, really wrong.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that aspect, no doubt about it. What about you, America? 855-266-5283. Lisa's given us some things to think about. Lisa Graves, Executive Director of the Center for Media and Democracy. Lisa, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
The will to fight, a fight for which I feel so ill-equipped. But what can I do?
There are those curious about bitcoins and those using and making money with bitcoins. What are bitcoins? A bitcoin is the first decentralized currency that can be easily transferred from person to person over the internet. No bank needed. This means lower fees and accounts can never be frozen, limited, or closed. you are in control of your money. And the best part? You can start earning and making money with Bitcoins right away. No computer or expertise is required to earn money with Bitcoins, and a growing number of merchants now accept Bitcoins. Plus, they're easily exchanged for dollars, euros, and more. Learn more about the easiest, cheapest, most profitable way to enter the Bitcoin market and get paid every 2 weeks by one of the fastest-growing Bitcoin miners in the world at cloudhashing.com. Just like it sounds, cloudhashing.com. That's cloudhashing.com. We mine your business.
Great news, pure water lovers. BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com has a special discount offer for all GCN listeners. You can't do better than a Big Berkey for economy. For only 1.7 cents a gallon, a single set of filters can last for 5 to 10 years. There's none better than a Big Berkey for emergency preparedness as a backup water source. And you just can't beat a Big Berkey to remove dangerous chlorine, all types of fluoride, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, parasites, and unhealthy byproducts from municipal water. Berkey water filter systems are even powerful enough to purify stagnant pond water. For the gold standard in water filters, get a Big Berkey at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. And all GCN listeners get 5% off all ceramic filter systems. For details, call 1-877-99-BERKEY. That's 877-99-BERKEY. Big Berkey water filters, for the love of clean water.
From the makers of Block It Pocket, we bring you a serious message about the health risks associated with cell phones and wireless devices. Studies have shown that long-term exposure can contribute to an assortment of health risks. Block It Pocket offers you two new products designed to help alleviate your concerns. See these two remarkable products at blockitpocket.com. Call 888-315-9618. Free shipping to the lower 48. Blockitpocket.com. Enhancing health and privacy.
Wouldn't it be nice to have one product that replaces more than 10, saving you space, time, and money? HempUSA.org has a complete full-spectrum vitamin mineral detox formulation called Micro Plant Powder Gold. Micro Plant Powder Gold contains 101 vitamins, minerals, probiotics, and iodine. Has a 100-year shelf life and is a perfect addition to any storage shelter. Make Micro Plant Powder Gold your choice. Call 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org today.
I'm really psyched about our next guest. He's in a virtual green room, kind of trapped in a virtual green room, if you will. My friend Rancher Ron has taught me all about feral hogs and trapping them. So who knew that we'd have Noel Golden on with us? And that's what he does, wireless traps. If you're a rancher, you have a wild or dangerous animal on the property, feral hogs that I just mentioned, my friend has that problem, also coyotes, you know, that kind of stuff. And he joins us now. So this is really a big problem, as you know, for a lot of people, isn't it?
Absolutely, Kate, and I appreciate the opportunity. People just don't really realize how much of a problem it is. I know there's been some, quote, reality TV shows that that show the excitement of it, but it's a huge problem. There's over 5 million hogs in the United States. 38 states have feral hogs in their states, and in Texas we've got over 2 million, and the numbers are growing literally exponentially. They don't have any natural predators, except when they're little babies, and then they have a mean mama taking care of them. So it's becoming a huge issue.
Yeah. The, you know, with what you're talking about, the traps, the first question I have is, you're talking how big the problem is. How does the technology work?
So we use a combination of cellular technology managed on the internet. There's a hardware that's installed at the trap. So if you can envision a great big pen 30 feet across, so that's 100 feet in circumference. You've got a trap door and a deer feeder in the middle, so there's a constant food source. When the hogs come in the trap, attracted by the corn from the feeder, our emotion sensor goes off, and we take pictures of whatever is coming in that trap. It may be deer, it may be raccoons, and then we're sending those to the internet. So we suggest that that when that gets installed, the customers, you know, have a cup of coffee in the morning, look at the pictures on the internet, and then eventually the hogs start coming in. And at first it'll be just a few because you've got the curious dumb ones that come in first, and the smart ones stay outside. They travel in family groups that it can be up to 30 or 40 in a group. And that's where the unique aspects of our technology come into play, because a traditional trap, there'd be a trip wire, and those first few come in, the trip wire goes off, you catch three hogs, and there's 30 outside that not only did they not get caught, they learned not to go in the trap because they are extremely smart. So with our system, the landowner gets to see when those hogs are coming in and when he's got the whole group coming in, and then simply changes online so that he starts getting pictures on his phone. He's seen that they've been coming in at 11 o'clock. He gets the first picture. He goes, nope, that's just those first three dumb ones that keep coming in. And then he waits, and the next picture shows more. And when he gets the whole group in there, he uses his phone, and he closes the trap. And it can be anywhere. You can be, you know, 100 miles away at home having dinner when the hogs are out in at the ranch.
So this has got to be, I'm thinking off the top of my head, this has to be a way more humane way to do this, isn't it?
Absolutely, because this is the only system that allows a human to be in control of what gets caught and when. So first of all, you're not using snares or other kind of things that can damage the animal. And secondly, if you've got deer or some other kind of non-targeted species, they call it, that's in the trap, you simply don't trip it. And thirdly, it's not humane to trap an animal and then leave it in there. So with our system, if you're not ready to go out and take care of the animals the next morning, you just don't trip the trap. So it is a much more humane and effective way of trapping.
Yeah. As you say, it's an effective way of doing this. So the question that, you know, people with kids would have, or mm-hmm. worry that somebody would accidentally not see it and that kind of stuff, is there a big risk of accidents with the traps? Is there a way around that?
Well, again, if these hogs are actually coming into more urban areas, in the Dallas area, the hogs are encroaching on the human population. It's kind of the other way around, because anywhere that there's a river, there's going to be hogs, and they are coming into subdivisions. They're tearing up golf courses.
Wow.
And so in a lot of these places, they want to be able to control those animals, but not have, Fifi caught in the trap. And so, again, this is because a human makes that decision, I'm going to trip that trap. There's no risk of it going off accidentally. It's a secure lock that's holding the gate open, and when you release that lock, it closes. So it is a very safe way of trapping.
All right, we're speaking to Noelle Golden, and, of course, what we're talking about is these wireless traps, and I keep focusing on the hogs, but it obviously works for others as well. What's the, other animals as well? I mentioned coyotes too. What's the biggest? Are the hogs the biggest problem right now, or are there other things like coyotes? Or coyotes a little bit bigger? What's the biggest problem for most people right now?
Well, the hogs are the single biggest problem because of the damage that they do to crops, the damage they do to water. There's actually some state-funded grants in Texas because of the pollution that the hogs are causing to the water supply, because they hang out in the creeks and then that flows downstream. So, there are certainly other species, and coyotes is up there, because the coyotes will kill calves, they'll kill horses, they'll kill all kind of other animals. So the coyotes are a significant problem, and they are very smart as well and very shy And we are having significant success with coyotes. One kind of fun fact is that in Hawaii, they have problems with feral goats. And you, does anybody know the joke about how the goat will eat anything? Can you imagine a goat eating all your pretty plants in Hawaii?
No.
And,
awful.
And so we have people that are catching feral goats in Hawaii.
Oh, you have to love that. The So how does a guy like you get into the business of trapping and this wireless video monitoring from your cell phone? How did you jump into this gig?
That's a great question, and it was actually by accident. My background is in the wireless communications field, and we started this company for the security for the access control industry. So we've got airports and schools and self-storage facilities and trucking companies all using our wireless technology and the internet to be able to control who enters their property and then have a record of who's entering their property. So there's no other system out there that does this. One day my nephew said, so you can, it can be solar powered. Yes, it can be solar powered and cellular. So it can be anywhere. Yes, it can be anywhere. And you can take pictures and open and close locks. Yes, I can do that. He said, well, can you trap a hog? I said, well, sure, but would anybody pay for it? So we started doing it, and sure enough, what we accidentally fell into was what we did not understand was that because a human can control what gets caught and when, then they can catch 30 at a time instead of 3 at a time. So it really is the most effective way of trapping, the biggest part of our business is still in the access control world where you want to be able to control who enters your property and you want to have a record of who enters your property, and it will work anywhere because, again, it is cellular and it can be solar powered.
You know, it's interesting talking about that. I just had to get a whole new AC done in my house, and we have that access. It's amazing what you can do with your cell phone, how you can video cameras, monitor, everything hooked up right through that. It's crazy.
Right. But all these technologies that you see on TV that talk about doing that require a broadband internet connection.
Yeah.
And so where we go are where there are no wires. There is no internet. So we can go to farms and ranches. We can go to oil wells. We can go to self-storage facilities. They don't have that wired infrastructure, but even airports where they're trying to control who's, you know, going through different gates, and for various reasons they can't run a wire across the runway, for example. So it's both urban and rural customer base. So anywhere that you want to be able to control and monitor access, but you can't connect with wires, that's where we play.
That's cool. NG, check it out. He's got good stuff going on. WirelessTraps.com. Thanks for hopping on with us. We'll talk to you again in the future.
Kate, it was wonderful. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
UtopiaSilver.com believes, as the Declaration of Independence states, that our rights come from God, not from government. The only lawful purpose of any government is to protect and secure the rights of the people, and no man or government has the authority to take what has been given to us by God. Among these rights are life, liberty, property, and the pursuit of happiness. And America's government has ceased to be the protector of liberty and of the people's God-given rights. But we, the people, can return America to greatness if we are willing to stand up and reassert our stolen rights. We ask that you join Utopia Silver in changing America's course in history. To save on health care and improve your health, call Utopia Silver at 888-213-4338. For a limited time, new customers will receive 50% off all colloidal silver and colloidal gold supplements. Visit us today at utopiasilver.com. That's U-T-O-P-I-A Silver, utopiasilver.com. Or call 888-213-4338. That's 888-213-4338.